from KQED.
Welcome to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. When Governor Gavin Newsom signed an executive order to put a hold on executions in California last week, he said the death penalty has been a failure, costing taxpayers billions and discriminating against the mentally ill and people of color. But opponents call the move an abuse of power, going against the will of the people. Voters rejected a ballot measure to repeal the death penalty just 2 years ago. Joining us to talk about the political fallout in the state and nationally of Newsom's order, Marisa Lagos, here in studio, politics correspondent and KQED co-host of KQED's Political Breakdown podcast. Welcome, Marisa.
Morning.
Good morning to you, and good morning to Thad Nausser, who also joins us. Thad Kausser, is professor of political science at UC San Diego. And Professor Kausser, good to have you aboard. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
And Marisa, let's begin with you. The governor has outlined pretty much what his reasons were. He's got the Democratic Party behind him in the state on this. But there is some pushback, and it's not just from Republicans.
Yeah, I mean, you know, this is obviously a very controversial issue that cuts across, I would say, party lines and sort of partisan leanings. And I think this was a really big surprise. I mean, in a way, he had sort of, if you read the tea leaves, been sort of publicly hinting at this for a couple weeks before the decision. But I think still it was a really sort of sudden move and a more sweeping one than, quite frankly, we've seen from any governor. And so this is something that I think will continue to be debated, obviously, over the next couple of years, and depending on if we vote on it in 2020. But in the meantime, I think there's a lot of mixed feelings among victims, people on both sides of this debate, depending on their views on capital punishment and sort of personal experience. And a lot of support, I would say, from Democratic circles and a lot of anger from folks who have long supported the death penalty.
It's interesting to read the response of Mark Klass, for example, who has been a major spokesman for those who have been victimized, families of those who have been victimized. Polly Klass, many remember, of course, a child in Petaluma who was killed by Robert Allen Davis, who is on death row. And he said that Newsom is acting like Trump. He's doing this for personal reasons. And he did bring that up. He said these are personal reasons.
Yeah. We heard this the day of, that this sort of, you know, criticism that doing this by fiat, by executive order, did put him on par with President Trump. I'm sure the governor has and would push back on that. But, you know, as somebody who covers politics and, you know, this is a deeply sort of personal question. I think that when you get into issues of morality, it does sort of transcend, as I said, the sort of normal partisan lines. And Newsom talked very personally about his own experience with a man who had essentially been framed by the mob in two killings, and that both his grandfather and then his father worked to exonerate. This man actually missed the death penalty, if you want to say it like that. One juror voted against it, and he got life in prison and eventually came out when somebody confessed to the murders themselves. And then he talked about going to death row and running into somebody on death row who had gone to high school with him. He talked about his mother fostering kids and sort of his own understanding after seeing a foster brother end up in prison around crack cocaine about racial disparities. But I think the thing that Newsom really honed in on is this idea of how many people have been exonerated from death row. More than 100, over the last several decades nationally, 20 in California, I believe.
164 since the 70s.
Yeah. And so what Newsom is basically saying, and people will disagree with this, I'm just quoting him, but is if we have 737 people on death row, you know, dozens of them may be innocent. And I think that when I spoke to the governor, that sort of moral dilemma is what really weighed on him. And really the question of the immediacy. He was advised that as soon as April, he was going to be asked to sign off on those lethal injection protocols, and that, you know, 25 of the 737 inmates had exhausted their appeals and could be up almost immediately for execution. And he would have to sign those death warrants. And he said he just wasn't willing to do that.
Well, what do you think the effect, Professor Kausser, is this? Let's talk about the state, first of all, as far as Gavin Newsom is concerned, because during the campaign, he said he would implement the death penalty. As lieutenant governor, he said if he became governor, he would implement it. And that was the position of Jerry Brown. So he certainly distinguished himself from Governor Brown, who was also at least morally opposed to the death penalty and personally opposed to the death penalty. And then we have Kamala Harris, who has certainly spoken out against the death penalty. It's as if in some ways he is really distinguishing himself from those two major political figures, isn't it?
He is. I think this is what Governor Newsom sees as a profile and courage moment for him. And it's something where it's absolutely, as Marissa said, right, a surprising thing under the normal logic of politics. Normally, you stay on the right side of public opinion. Normally, you don't do the exact opposite of what voters have said they want you to do in a recent proposition. But Gavin Newsom does, right? He has a long history of this, going back to 2004, of course, when he was mayor of San Francisco and got out in front of public opinion on same-sex marriage. And then fast forward to a few years ago, where he was one of the early leaders to embrace legalization of marijuana. On both of those issues, he's proved to be on the right side of history. The death penalty, I think, is an even bigger political gamble, because it's one where it's been a controversial issue for 40 or 50 years in California. It hasn't seen this major change in public opinion, but we have seen a decline in support for the death penalty in recent years as a function of the fact that the crime rates are going down, that the success of all these innocence projects, and also the reframing of this issue, the clear realization that it has racially disparate impacts. Gavin Newsom is gambling that he'll be on the right side of history again, that he'll be able to lead California to, in another initiative, getting rid of the death penalty, and what he's doing is simply getting ahead of history and really guiding and leading the state in that direction.
Well, if you put credence in the Gallup poll, for example, you have a real trajectory here. 86% in favor of the death penalty in 1994 for murders, those convicted of murder. 2018, it's down to 56%. Most recent figure is 49%. And those are pretty dramatic. That's a pretty dramatic descent. I have a long memory, and I'm sure you do as well, Professor Kauser. You can remember the days when three members of the Supreme Court in California were essentially moved from their seats because they were thought to be against the death penalty. And that's been an extraordinary kind of quantum leap that we've gone to here in terms of public opinion. But what does it say on the national level from your sites? That is, on the national level, we're going to see movement of Democrats in the House to actually go near the death penalty? Abolition?
Well, just to back up. Yeah. Just to back up to the California history, I think you're absolutely right that we've seen this one-way downward trend since the spikes in crime rates of the early 1990s and our tough on crime wave of policies in California. But it hasn't been, but it's been a cycle over history that's really ridden the ebbs and flows of the crime rate. So back in the 60s, when Pat Brown was dealing with this issue, when it was incredibly controversial, it had similar support, you know, high 50s, about 60% support. So the death penalty's current decline in popularity doesn't necessarily mean that it's going that way in the future trajectory if we have another recession. If we have another crime wave that comes with that recession, as we often see, we could see a reaction against that that could move the political winds against the direction in which Gavin Newsom wants to push them. Now, nationally, California, which likes to think of itself as a leader, is actually a follower on this issue. So 20 states, I believe, now have moratoriums on the death penalty. Many other governors have also taken similar executive orders. In some ways, Gavin Newsom is at the end of the long line of blue states and some red states that are taking a step back from the death penalty. And so I don't see California's policy shift as something that's going to reframe and change the national debate. I think its likeliest national impact could be in Gavin Newsom's potential run for president in 2024 or 2028, which he's certainly looking ahead towards.
And Marissa, what about voter approval back in 2016? Where does that tie into this?
Well, I mean, I think it gives sort of credence to this idea by, you know, critics of this decision that he is subverting the will of the voters. And I think that, you know, to Thad's point, this is one of those issues that has, as you pointed out, trended a certain way, but is still a really divisive issue and something that we've seen, you know, the different sort of lines drawn than you would on a lot of the other criminal justice reforms that, quite frankly, you know, have changed the calculation here when it comes to prisons and jails and probation and parole, but have been sort of modest. You know, a lot of the criminal justice reforms that voters have embraced or that lawmakers have been kind of pushed to embrace were crafted very carefully, I think, for this reason. And so I think it's an open question. The two ballot measures in 2016, the one to speed up the death penalty was very close. It was like 49-51. The other one was a couple more points difference. There was, I think it was 53-47 or around then. And it was a busy year, as an understatement, that we had something like 20 ballot measures that year. And I think there wasn't a huge amount of campaigning put into the ballot measure. I do wonder if that could be different in 2020 or if it could be a similar situation given the fact that, you know, we have a presidential race and we'll have another a number of other ballot measures, including potentially one to reform Prop 13. On the other hand, you know, presidential years tend to be the most progressive electorate. And so the fact that even in that context, you saw this voted down raises some questions, I think. But, you know, Newsom is at the beginning of his 4-year term. There's a lot to happen between now and 2024, 2028. I am not ready to sort of to say that this is going to kill his chances of higher office. We did see Kamala Harris, for example, who's running for president, our senator in California, say, you know, come out. She's always opposed to it, but really saying that this was a good call by the governor, which I think is interesting because she really refused to halt. When she was attorney general, she spent a lot of time defending the death penalty as her office, and she said that she had to legally. So
there's been a lot of pushback on her, though, from the left on that. That continues. And
yeah.
I wonder, Thad Kauser, and again, Thad Kauser is professor of political science at UC San Diego, if you can just remember again back in 1998 when Michael Dukakis was a presidential candidate against George H.W. Bush, you had to be in favor of the death penalty. There was nothing really that could move you forward politically in any respect if you were against the death penalty. So there's been quite a shift here. But what about the fact that President Trump is all in favor of the death penalty, and you've got a Supreme Court, which presumably probably is, and remember back in 1972, they struck down as cruel and unusual punishment and then reinstated the death penalty in 1976. You've got this whole sense that the Supreme Court is leaning more to the right. Help us understand what we think might be happening on the national level, if anything, Thad Kauser?
Well, I think nationally we've seen similar trends to public opinion in California. You've seen a decline in support for the death penalty, and you've seen many states moving in this direction. But that support, that trend, that flip in public opinion hasn't quite yet happened. There's not strong majorities against the death penalty. There are just a lot, and there are a lot of people who've moved to being undecided. And so what you're really seeing is Gavin Newsom staking out a governing style in which he wants to be a trustee rather than just a delegate who does whatever the direct democracy electorate in California says. He's willing to pay the political price of doing that and take on the political risk of doing that. I think this is something, looking ahead to his presidential aspirations, this is something that incontrovertibly will help him with the Democratic electorate in a future year, but also clearly make it harder for him to do the thing he needs to do first to be a player on the national stage, which is win re-election in California. You know, this could present difficulties, especially if we're in a recession and have another crime wave, and he's seen as going against the will of the people. If you put this in the context of state governments and where California has been, there was a landmark study that came out a few years ago out of Columbia University that looked in about 40 areas, what does the public want in each state, what does government deliver? And California actually did the best of any state. We're more likely to give voters what they want, but when we're wrong on the left side, almost always. And I think what we're seeing here is something where Gavin Newsom is willing to take on that risk, willing to say that he's not going to do just what the voters say. He's going to try to push the voters. He's going to try to lead the voters. And if he's wrong on the left, that's the side that he wants to be wrong on.
All right, let me find out what you, our listeners, think about this. And I want to now invite you to be part of the program. You can join us now at our toll-free number. And that number is 866-733-6786. We welcome your calls and your thoughts. They used to call talking about the death penalty or debating a talk show 101 like gun control, but we're really talking about the political fallout and the effects and consequences of this position that Gavin Newsom as governor has taken with an executive order. Join us now again at 866-733-6786 or by email, forum@kqed.org, or go to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. We do want to hear from you. Marisa Lagos with us, politics correspondent with KQED and co-host of KQED's Political Breakdown podcast with Scott Schaefer, and Thad Kauser, also with us, professor of political science at the University of California, San Diego. And we do welcome your involvement, and we'll go to your calls forthwith and your emails here. Let me go to just one more question with you, Marisa, and that is something that isn't talked about in this whole picture a lot. Is there's a shortage, really, of attorneys equipped to handle capital cases. That plays into the whole equation.
Yeah, and that was one of the things that the ballot measure in 2016 to speed up the appeals process tried to get their arms around. I guess less the attorneys and well, partly the attorneys, but also which courts could consider those cases. And that's been a real issue. And I think, you know,
especially if you think of the death penalty as a deterrent, right?
Well, right. And I think that that gets into a lot of the debate over this, where you really find that, you know, we have set up a very robust appeals process because you want to be pretty sure before you put somebody to death. But the bottom line is only, I want to say about a dozen, 13 people have been executed in California over the past three decades. We haven't seen an execution since 2006. No, a lot of that was related to the lethal injection protocol and a judge finding that essentially it could cause cruel and unusual suffering. But when you consider that it's been 13 years and there are 737 people on death row and only 25 of them have exhausted their appeals, it kind of gives you a sense of that process and how long and arduous it is. And what victims of families who support Newsom's decision say, and, you know, I want to be clear here, there are a very wide range of views on this issue by victims' families. And I think that, you know, you cannot tell somebody how to grieve. But one thing that I've heard from some people is that they don't that those constant appeals are actually difficult for some people, for most people, I would say. And that for some families who oppose the death penalty, they would prefer the certainty of life in prison, which would not sort of have this ongoing appeals process that we see in these habeas petitions. Of course, for other people who really believe, you know, as Governor Newsom put it, that one family said it was his job to eradicate evil and that this is, you know, to them sort of a slap in the face after all these years of court proceedings and sort of fits and starts around the death penalty.
Well, again, we're going to go to your calls and emails here. In fact, a listener writes, I often try to encourage young people to vote. They often say it doesn't matter. Perhaps they have a point, as Newsom just negated the will of the people. The governor has the right to present legislation and have it voted on. He pulled a Donald Trump. Here's Judy, who writes, the death penalty is undeniably on a continuum of long, painful history of white supremacy. Governor Newsom has recognized that it is time to shed the useless skin of white fragility. Let me get some callers on here, and let me go first to a caller in Novato, and that's you, Roy. You're on. Morning.
Good morning. I've always looked at it in kind of a logical sense regarding the death penalty, that the role of government and the role of society is to take criminals and other folks who commit crimes like that off of the streets and keep them out of society and keep society safe. And not to play God. God will decide that person's fate in the end. But, you know, society is there and our police system and the judicial, everything works very well in this country. And there's no, to me, there's no reason for the government to take that next step and kill that person because that's God's job.
All right. I thank you for that opinion. We'll let it sit and we'll go to another caller, Barack from Oakland. Welcome, Brock. You're on the air.
Hi, Michael. Thank you. I actually grew up in a country where the death penalty didn't really exist except in very special cases, and a life imprisonment was 25 years. I'm curious if your speakers there feel that this may be a bit of a move away from an incredibly punitive system, justice system in the United States.
What do you think, Professor Kauser?
Well, California and the United States as a whole have very different views than most other Western democracies. So, for instance, I was lucky enough to be in Australia on a Fulbright fellowship. There was an execution of two Australian nationals in Bali. And the entire country, it was just a unified, monolithic opposition to the death penalty. Everyone in the country thought that this was incredibly barbaric, you know, outdated, and they just couldn't understand why Americans supported it. And so I think in some ways the direction that Gavin Newsom is trying to move the state and that others are trying to move the country would put California and the United States more in line with most other modern democracies.
And let me thank the caller. And I want to bring Kevin Fagan into this conversation. Kevin Fagan, reporter of the San Francisco Chronicle, who actually has witnessed seven executions and wrote about it in the daily paper. Kevin, good to have you back with us. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Well, let's begin with your feelings on these seven executions. They seem to amount to observing people and observing people on both sides and saying nobody's really happy.
Yeah, no one is happy. As a reporter, I, of course, can't take a stand one way or the other against or for the death penalty. But what I've observed in covering, in witnessing seven and covering several more after that, is that no one gets happy. No one gets closure. It's like Marisa said the other day, or I mean the other minute, when you see this happen and when the finality takes place and you leave and the guy who killed your son, your daughter, your wife, whoever, is gone, the pain is still there. Because I've talked to many victims and victim survivors after we all stood together in the death chamber and watched a killer die. And years later, they're still in great pain. It didn't bring them any relief.
And this is over 26 years, Kevin, right?
Yes, yeah. And I watched the last gassing and the first injection and then several injections after that.
Well, talk about injections now, because that's certainly become a big part of the new debate on the death penalty.
When you watch it, it looks very benign. The guards bring a guy in, they lay him down on a gurney, they put needles in his arms, and he goes to sleep. The trouble comes when they have to hunt for a vein. And given the nature of a lot of criminals, especially hardcore criminals, they don't always have great veins, either muscle-bound or they're drug abusers whose veins have collapsed. And so that causes some distress for the prisoner as he's being put to death. The other thing is that because of the nature of the chemicals that get pumped into him, and it's always a him, we haven't executed a woman in God knows how long, you can't tell once the first flow goes in whether he's feeling anything or not. He gets paralyzed. And so as his heart is being stopped, there are theories that he's in great distress. And that's one of the hearts of the argument over the whether death penalty is humane or not.
Yeah, it's been a whole part of concern over drugs and the way they're used in some of the states that have used execution.
The gassing was clearly painful. I watched Dave Mason die, and he clearly suffered. He twitched and drooled and bucked and heaved. I mean, it was really a process. The injection looks benign, you know, except for poking in the needles and taking a while. It doesn't look like they're suffering. But, again, you can't tell because the guy's unable to move. He's paralyzed.
Kevin, good to have you with us. Thank you for joining us for this segment.
All right, thank you.
It's Kevin Fagman. Kevin Fagman is a reporter with the San Francisco Chronicle and, again, has been a witness to seven executions. I was at the execution in San Quentin when I was with ABC, and I must tell you, I talked to a lot of people. They were very strong polarization on both sides, as there still is. But there were people who talked about intellectually being against the death penalty and also feeling viscerally in favor of it. And I think there is a split in many of us that can be understood in those terms. When you think about heinous crimes and Robert Alton Harris, some of you may remember, killed a couple of boys, took a hamburger and said, be a man and die from this kid. There's a lot of visceral feeling that comes into it. And yet intellectually you think, what does the state have the right and so forth? I'm going to read some comments here. Mm-hmm. A listener writes, I was involved in a double homicide that I survived, and the perpetrator, when caught, faced the death penalty. The mothers of the victims did not believe in it, so they worked with the courts to offer him a plea bargain of life without parole. At the time, I was angry because I felt he needed to die. However, the plea bargain allowed us to not go to the trial and save many hours of reliving the horrors of what he did. Judy writes, victim family members are often held up as the reason we must support state-sanctioned killing. As a sister of a murder victim who opposes the death penalty, I would like to point out that the existence of both support and opposition from victims' families points to the need for taking this debate out of the realm of morality and moving it toward a debate of what makes us safe. Next call, in support of the death penalty. Sam, good morning.
Hello. Yes, obviously it's an important discussion. What I would say is, first of all, the majority of Californians obviously still think that the death penalty should be used in the most extreme cases. My concern is that some of the arguments that Newsom used for his decision and others have used against the death penalty are not really valid, it seems to me. Let me just use one example because it's obviously short on time. For example, if you had no punishment for other crimes such as rape, and other extreme cases, other extreme crimes, and there would be, I think it's just reasonable, it's logical that you would have more of these crimes. If you didn't have punishment for burglary and embezzlement and other crimes, you would have more of these because people wouldn't feel deterred. So it's true, I agree, that it, you know, the death penalty doesn't deter every person who's going to commit murder, but I would say it's logical that it will prevent some people from doing that. And even if it prevents a few deaths, that's probably valid and useful. So, and the point that the other point that's made is that some innocent people may be executed. That, of course, I'm against. And in cases where there is doubt.
I'm sorry, Sam, in a number of cases, innocent people have been executed. I mean, that's just a reality. But I take your point about deterring in some instances, and that debate has gone on since time immemorial, probably, or people started thinking about capital punishment, the idea that it is a deterrent in some cases, it's not in others, or what do we know more about that, Marisa Lagos? There has been some recent studies, right?
Yeah. You know, my understanding is that there's not a lot of correlation. And, you know, deterrence and crime is a really hard thing to prove anyway. You know, I think sort of to the caller's point and some of the things we were discussing before about how victims feel and, you know, I mean, there obviously is a reason that we have a criminal justice system that is separate from the, you know, the way that letting individuals sort of carry out what they think should happen to somebody who commits a crime. But I asked, you know, the governor about that point, about how visceral it is. And if you look at the LA Times did a really interesting data project where they've put up everyone on death row. And if you look at those men and very few women, I mean, there's some horrific crimes. What the governor told me was that he understands that and that visceral reaction. But for him, that wasn't sort of the decision he was tasked with. He was tasked with this question of whether to execute these people, and, you know, that he had to look at it differently, basically, than victims did.
Let me read one final comment. Mike writes, Newsom is thumbing his nose at California's great progressive legacy of the initiative, the referendum, and the recall. The people spoke as recently as 2016 that they wanted the death penalty. This undermines the argument in favor of abolishing the Electoral College if leaders like Newsom reject direct democracy. That may be a subject for a whole other day. Thank you both. Thanks, Marisa Lagos, and thank you, Thad Kauser, and thank you, Kevin Fagan, and thank you, our listeners. We wouldn't be here without you. We're here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11. An hour is repeated, 10 to 11 in the evening. And when we return, we're going to talk about Lawrence Ferlinghetti as he approaches a centenary year. He's going to be 100 on Sunday. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation, and by Jan Schramm and Maria Minetti Schramm, founders of the Minetti Schramm Museum of Art at UC Davis. On view through April 14th, Blue and Yellow Corridor, an iconic work by Bruce Nauman, realized on the very grounds where the artist conceived it.